If you have ever tried to, build a regular meditation habit, you probably know this exact scenario,
Oh, absolutely.
right? Like you sit down, you cross your legs, you close your eyes, and you take a deep breath, and you are trying your absolute hardest to just quiet your thoughts. But almost immediately, your body just starts screaming at you. Your knee aches or your back itches. And I mean, your nervous system is practically buzzing. You're just restlessly waiting for the timer on your phone to finally go off.
It's an incredibly common wall that people hit. I mean, we often experience what feels like the restless body syndrome of modern mindfulness.
Ooh, I like that term.
Yeah, from a physiological standpoint, when we try to force ourselves into this, frozen, rigid posture, our nervous system can actually rebel,
Interesting.
right? It misinterprets that sudden and forced stillness as feeling trapped. So it pumps out adrenaline instead of relaxing.
That makes so much sense because, well, we usually treat the physical body like it is just this annoying distraction that we have to power through to reach enlightenment. But what if the body isn't the obstacle? What if it's actually the vehicle?
Exactly.
And that is the exact question we are exploring today in this deep dive. We are looking into the Tara Mandala Dance.
Yes, and to be clear right up front, we are not looking at this as like a theatrical performance.
Right, not at all.
We aren't analyzing it as cultural entertainment. We're exploring a living, breathing Dharma practice, like actual meditation in motion.
And we have some truly remarkable sources for this exploration today. We're drawing directly from the personal lived experiences of three very dedicated practitioners. So we have Amber, Claire, and Phyllis.
Yeah, their insights give us this amazing window into a deeply embodied Vajrayana Buddhist practice. It brings together body, speech, and mind in a way most of us have probably never seen before.
But before we jump into their specific stories, I feel like we need to set the foundation. If you are, completely new to Vajrayana Buddhism, you might be wondering who or what exactly Tara is.
Right, so in the Tibetan Buddhist tradition, Tara is essentially the feminine embodiment of enlightened activity. You can think of her as representing action. She embodies compassion, wisdom, protection, courage, and a really profound, immediate responsiveness to the suffering in the world. So, the Dance of the 21 Praises of Tara is a ritual movement based on ancient practices dedicated to her. It has deep historical roots, but as we're going to see, it is actively evolving and very much alive today.
Okay, let's unpack this because if we want to understand how this dance actually transforms the mind, we need to know what it feels like to stumble upon it in the real world.
Absolutely.
We have to move from the abstract concept of Tara to a visceral encounter. And I want to look at how Amber discovered this.
Amber's introduction is fascinating because, well, it caught her completely off guard. She was an experienced practitioner, but she hadn't seen this before.
Right. So picture the scene. Amber is at a monastery, and a fellow practitioner pulls her aside, hands her a camera, and asks her to photograph a gathering out in the courtyard.
Right.
Amber walks outside and she suddenly sees like 50 to 60 people dancing together. It is this vibrant mix of people dressed in traditional Tara garments, dancing right alongside lamas and everyday practitioners just in their regular clothes.
Yeah.
And Amber noted that she was immediately hit by this palpable, sweet, and auspicious energy. It felt entirely different from anything she had done before. And I mean, she had done a lot. She had practiced sitting meditation, chanting, drumming, even walking meditation.
And that contrast Amber felt right there is the core of this practice. In traditional sitting meditation, the focus is generally on observing the mind while keeping the physical form completely quiet. But Amber realized, standing in that courtyard, that Tara dancing was offering something totally different. In the Tibetan tradition, the mind is actually said to reside in the heart, and speech flows through us as vital energy. Yeah, and this dance is designed to integrate all of that simultaneously.
It makes me think of the difference between reading music and actually playing it.
Oh, that's a great way to put it.
Right. Traditional sitting meditation often feels to me like sitting in a quiet room, carefully studying a sheet of music. You are internalizing the structure, you're observing the notes. But Tara dancing sounds like picking up the instrument and physically playing the symphony.
Yes.
But I'm trying to wrap my head around the mechanics of this. How exactly does this dance differ from, say, just taking a really mindful, focused walk in the park?
That is a really great distinction to make. Taking a mindful walk is usually about observing your physical steps or your surroundings, you're cultivating awareness. But Tara dancing, as Amber points out, is active creation. It integrates the body through highly specific physical movements. It integrates speech through the continuous chanting of mantra, and it integrates the mind through intense active visualization.
Okay, so it's firing on all cylinders.
Exactly. It takes the Dharma, which is the Buddhist term for the core teachings, mm-hmm. or universal truth, and turns it from a philosophy into a physical action. To use Amber's exact words, she said, this wasn't just dance, it was moving meditation.
Moving meditation?
You are physically exhausting the ego's defenses by demanding that your body, your vocal cords, and your imagination all work together on the exact same task.
That sounds incredibly demanding, but also, like, deeply unifying. So if the body is moving and the voice is chanting, I want to zero in on what the imagination and the mind is doing, because the internal experience they describe is wild.
It really is.
While Amber is physically moving in that courtyard, her mind is completely reshaping her reality through visualization.
Yes, Amber provides us with this stunning description of what is happening in what she calls her inner sky while she dances.
Yeah, she describes visualizing millions of tiny, radiant, translucent Taras up in the sky. And in her mind's eye, they are slowly floating closer and closer until a giant, luminous Tara stands right in front of her, literally pouring unconditional love and light directly into Amber.
It is a breathtaking image.
Yeah.
But it also represents a very specific, advanced psychological and spiritual mechanism known as deity yoga.
And this is where I have to admit some confusion. Maybe just some skepticism on behalf of the listener.
Sure.
If you are used to secular mindfulness, you know, downloading an app, focusing on your breath, noticing a thought and letting it go, visualizing glowing deities in the sky sounds a lot like playing pretend.
Right, yeah.
Or worse, from a modern Western perspective, it sounds like you are just worshiping a mythical god outside of yourself. How is this not just a fantasy?
What's fascinating here is that that is the exact hurdle most Western practitioners face when they first hear about this. It sounds like an external religion.
Yeah, exactly.
But Amber makes a crucial distinction that clarifies how deity yoga actually functions. This practice is not about worshiping Tara as some separate, distant entity sitting on a cloud passing judgment. It is entirely about Tara loving the practitioner. The psychological goal of the visualization is to dissolve the boundary between the self and the deity.
Wait, so it's a way of, like, tricking the brain into accepting unconditional love?
Essentially, yes.
Yeah.
We often have massive psychological blocks against loving ourselves.
Yeah.
So we project that pure, enlightened compassion onto the image of Tara.
Oh, I see.
Amber says, it's not me worshiping Tara, it's Tara loving me.
Wow.
By vividly imagining receiving that unconditional love and light, the practitioner's nervous system begins to relax. The boundary of the ego softens, and they realize that they too can become a being of light. You're using the imagination to train the brain to recognize its own inherent enlightened nature.
That completely flips my understanding of visualization. But if you use it to break down the ego internally, what happens when you open your eyes and try to project that onto the physical world?
That is the next step.
And that brings us to Claire's experience. Claire actually tested this. She had practiced Tara Puja traditional chanting and prayers sitting on a cushion for years. So Tara was already deeply meaningful to her.
Right.
But when she started the dance, it forced her to make this internal visualization relational.
Because suddenly you aren't just in your own inner sky. You are in a room full of other actual people.
Right. The practice asked Claire to look at the actual flawed, physical human being dancing right in front of her and see them as Tara.
Yeah.
She had to actively imagine Tara's pure essence radiating right inside that normal person's heart. But, I mean, how do you actually do that? How do you look at a regular person, maybe someone who just cut you off in traffic that morning, and see a glowing deity?
What Claire is describing is the mechanism of sacred perception. From a psychological standpoint, our brains are wired to scan for threats and flaws. We constantly judge the people around us. Sacred perception is the deliberate, rigorous practice of overriding that default setting. Through the dance, Claire forces her mind to overlay the image of Tara onto the person in front of her.
Wow.
When you do that, the ordinary room ceases to be just a mundane room. In her perception, it becomes a pure realm filled with exaggerated beauty, radiance, and flowers.
That is so beautiful.
And the physical movements of the dance, the reaching arms, the specific gestures, they stop being mere choreography. They literally become physical ways of extending blessing out into the world. You are actively practicing seeing the good in others until it becomes a reflex.
You are literally moving through space differently because you are treating the space itself as sacred. But, you know, this brings up a really important aspect of the practice. It doesn't happen in isolation.
No, not at all.
You are doing this in a circle with a community. So let's look at this through the eyes of Phyllis, who discovered the immense power of the mandala, the actual physical formation of the dancers.
Phyllis's story gives us a beautiful sense of the environment and the community that sustains this practice, particularly the deep sense of devotion that grounds it.
Yeah, so Phyllis first encountered the dance of the 21 praises of Tara on a cliff in Kauai.
Incredible setting.
You can just picture the sensory experience, the grass beneath their feet, the massive ocean stretching out behind them. Phyllis admitted she was really shy at first. She watched them and thought, I could never dance like that in front of other people.
Right, it's intimidating.
But she found herself drawn in by the devotion. She used this beautiful word, moana, which in Hawaiian and Polynesian cultures refers to the deep ocean, but she was using it metaphorically to describe the unseen, vast spiritual essence that was present in that dancing circle.
And to understand what physically drew Phyllis in, we have to look at the geometry of the mandala itself. They don't just stand in lines like a standard dance class.
Right.
The participants start in a crescent moon shape, which traditionally represents the feminine principle and receptivity. And as the dance progresses, they move into a golden spiral.
Wait, like the Fibonacci sequence?
Exactly like that. The golden spiral is nature's universal pattern of growth, creation, and evolution. You see it in seashells, in galaxies.
That's wild.
So the dancers are physically mapping out the pattern of universal growth with their bodies.
That is fascinating. But they are doing something even more intense mentally while they move in that spiral. The choreography incorporates a practice called Tonglen.
Yes. Tonglen is the Tibetan practice of giving and taking.
And I have to pause here because when I read about Tonglen in the sources, it sounded completely counterintuitive to everything we're taught today.
Oh, for sure.
Modern wellness trends are all about, like, protecting your peace and blocking out negative energy. But Tonglen asks the dancers to actively visualize taking in the suffering of the world and, in exchange, breathing out and releasing Tara's healing light and compassion outward.
Right.
Why on earth would you intentionally visualize taking in suffering?
It is a brilliant psychological inversion. When we constantly try to protect our peace by pushing away the suffering of others, we actually build a rigid wall around our ego.
Okay, yeah.
That wall makes us feel isolated and fragile. Tonglen tears that wall down. By actively choosing to take in suffering, knowing that you have the internal resources to transform it into light and send it back out, you build immense psychological resilience.
Yeah.
You realize you aren't fragile, and you foster a profound, unbreakable connection with the people around you.
It's not about shielding yourself. It's about becoming a filter for the world. And that philosophy of connection is vividly reflected in the radical inclusion of this space.
Absolutely.
Phyllis shared some incredible examples of how this dance creates a field of inclusion that welcomes people who might never, ever walk through the doors of a traditional Buddhist temple. Some people just show up for the colors or the music or sheer curiosity, and then something profound happens to them.
The mandala works on people, even when they don't fully understand why or how.
Yeah, Phyllis mentioned one woman who arrived and completely dismissed the dance at first. She was highly skeptical, practically rolling her eyes. But by the end of the session, she found herself crying these deep, inexplicable tears.
Wow.
She had no idea where they came from, but she was totally overwhelmed by the energy. Then there was an autistic woman who had always struggled with complex spatial patterns and physical coordination.
Which makes sense because chaotic or highly demanding physical environments can easily overwhelm the nervous system, especially for someone on the autism spectrum.
Right. But through participating in this highly predictable, repetitive, and deeply supportive mandala, she found a sense of regulation. She eventually gained so much confidence in her own body and spatial awareness that she actually began traveling independently.
That's amazing.
And they also explicitly welcome women with physical disabilities, including women in wheelchairs, seamlessly integrating them into the spiral. But the story that completely blew my mind was about the breech baby.
That is a remarkable example of what we call somatic release.
Phyllis described a woman in the group who had been born a breech baby, you know, feet first. For years, whenever she entered the dance mandala, she would unconsciously enter it backward.
Wow.
She wasn't doing it on purpose. Her body just naturally oriented that way. But after years of practicing in this incredibly safe healing circle, she finally aligned. She entered straight on, moving forward, as if the dance had allowed her to be, in Phyllis's words, birthed straight.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, how does a dance fix something like that?
Well, somatic psychology tells us that the physical body literally holds on to early trauma or tension patterns. Your muscles and your fascia remember the stress of your birth or past injuries.
Right.
When you move repetitively in an environment that your nervous system registers as completely emotionally safe and supported, like a meditative mandala, the body finally lets its guard down. It releases those trapped physical patterns.
That's incredible.
It speaks directly to a quote from one of their teachers, Lama Tenzin Rinpoche, who said, "Someone will wake up doing this dance."
And the most beautiful part is that it isn't just the dancers who feel this. Lama Volker noted that people who merely sit on the sidelines and watch the dance receive just as much blessing as those actively performing it.
Exactly.
Because the space itself is charged. The dance is entirely about sincerity, not perfection. You don't need to be a trained dancer. You just have to show up with an open heart.
The structure of the mandala does the heavy lifting. The participants just have to step into it.
So we've explored monastery courtyards and ocean cliffs. But if you are listening to this on your commute, you might be wondering how an ancient, complex spiritual practice fits into the reality of a busy modern Tuesday morning.
Right.
Let's look at the practical application through Amber's daily routine today.
Amber's current practice is a perfect demonstration of how adaptable this tradition really is. I mean, she doesn't need a cliff in Kauai anymore.
No. Amber dances every single morning right in her home. And she connects with her Sangha, which is just the Buddhist term for a community of practitioners over Zoom. I absolutely love how she phrases this. She calls her morning Zoom session her body, speech, and mind vacation.
Which is a very profound way to look at a 45-minute routine. It is a vacation from the relentless demands of the ego.
For those 45 minutes, she uses the dance as a form of physical therapy for her mind. She moves through Tara's 21 specific qualities. Qualities like wisdom, compassion, joy, and power.
Right.
And by physically enacting those traits, she processes and releases all the accumulated stress and emotions of her daily life. Here's where it gets really interesting. I like to think of it almost like a daily multivitamin, but for the soul.
I like that analogy.
You know how if you have bad posture, just reading a book about straight spines won't fix your back? You have to do the physical exercises every day to retrain the muscles? Amber is doing the physical reps of compassion and gratitude before she even checks her morning email.
And that physical repetition is crucial to preventing tradition from becoming static. Amber makes a powerful statement in her sources about this. She says, "We don't want a museum of Buddhism, we want living Buddhism."
Because in a museum, everything is behind glass. You look at a beautiful ancient statue of Tara, you read the little informational placard, and then you walk away completely unchanged.
Precisely. Living Buddhism means the practice is happening right now. It is happening in your living room, over a webcam, and the sweat and the movement are actively changing how you interact with your family and your coworkers afterward.
Yeah.
It's also worth highlighting how Amber situates this ancient practice in our current cultural moment. Now, it's important to note here for the listener, we are simply exploring Amber's perspective from the source material. We're not taking a stance on this, just sharing her ideas.
Right, absolutely.
She looks at this through a modern sociological lens, describing the Tara dance as a direct antidote to what she calls toxic masculinity. In her view, the practice actively generates and sends waves of the divine feminine and unconditional love out into a world that can be overly rigid and aggressive.
She is essentially saying that we don't have to transcend or escape the human body to find enlightenment or to heal the culture. The human body itself, with all its flaws and awkwardness, can be the actual machinery for enlightenment.
It brings the lofty concepts of compassion and emptiness out of the intellect and forces you to literally sweat them out into the room.
So what does all of this mean for you, the listener? Let's bring this deep dive in for a landing.
Sounds good.
We have seen that the Tara Mandala dance is not a performance. It is a profound ancient technology designed to merge the body, the speech, and the mind. It demands that you take the concept of unconditional love and physically extend it through your arms, through your voice, to the real people standing right next to you.
It takes the Dharma off the meditation cushion and weaves it directly into the muscles and the bones.
So I want to ask you to reflect on your own life. How often do you engage your whole body in your moments of reflection or learning? Are your beliefs stuck in a museum of rigid intellectual habits where you just read about being a good person?
Yeah.
Or are you actively looking for a living, breathing practice that asks all of you, your physical body included, to show up and participate?
To build on that, I want to leave you with a final practical thought to mull over today. We talked extensively about how Claire used the tarot dance to practice sacred perception. Literally looking at a flawed human being across the room and choosing to see them as an embodiment of compassion and wisdom.
Yeah.
What would happen if you applied that exact same mental technology to your everyday life right now?
Oh, that is a fascinating experiment.
Try it today.
Yeah.
The next time you're standing in a slow, frustrating line at the grocery store, or you are sitting in a tense, irritating meeting at work, what if you chose, just for 10 seconds, to view the person who is frustrating you as a Tara?
Wow.
What if you imagine that they too possess an inner essence of radiant light and wisdom, even if it is currently buried under their bad mood? How would deliberately practicing that sacred perception change the way your chest feels in that moment?
That's powerful.
How would it change the way you move through the rest of your day?
That is a challenge I think every single one of us could benefit from taking on, taking the practice out of the sanctuary and right into the grocery store line. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive into the Tara Mandala dance. Keep exploring, stay curious, and remember that sometimes the absolute best way to quiet an anxious mind is to finally let your body move. Take care, everyone.